Next 40 days are critical, and I feel like so many players lose their season before it ever starts because of the way they handle these next 40. It's not a vacation. They've got to get ready to play ball. You know, we kind of trick it by pretending the 4-day acclimation period will help them, kind of give them a runway to get into the season. That there is no runway. When you get here, we got to go, and if you're not prepared to play, you're going to get hurt. And that's league wide, and we can put bubble wrap on these guys and delay the inevitable, which leads to injury weeks 1 through 5 during the season. But the important thing is that our players attack the heck out of the next 40 days, get here ready to play, and have an amazing training camp.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com, publisher for NFL Draft on SI, and my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, it's Friday. The summer has begun. Well, technically, Sunday is the first day of actual summer. Titans not doing any activity until late July, but we got some stuff to talk about. How's it going today?
I'm doing well. Titans wrapped up mandatory mini camp earlier this week. That is certainly going to be a part of the topic that we discuss today regarding, you know, roster upgrades and not. And yes, as Hershey Forever points out, road gravy, which I love. What two interesting words, road gravy. a little bit gross, but road gravy is, as you can tell, he's not in his normal environment, his natural habitat, if you will. Fun fact, going to let you guys in on a little secret. He's actually at the lake house that was purchased for the Music City Audible by Gary Soto. Yeah, right on cue. Gary Soto in the comments. Don't pretend like you don't know where he is, Gary. You got the mortgage payment to make this Friday. Graver is at the lake house, sponsored by Gary Soto, at the Music City Audible's vacation home, if you will.
Yeah, we got to get you down here, Justin, to enjoy some of this this stuff. Mm. Yeah, no, I'm apologies for any audio quality deficiencies on my end. I think this mic's pretty good, but you might hear a few like loud, clicky mic pops because it's not the best thing I've ever used. But we'll get through it. It's one Friday. We'll be back in the normal studio on Monday. Justin, we got some stuff we're going to talk about today. We're going to cover the Titans offseason, but mostly looking at it through the lens of how is the roster right now? Do they need to add players at any positions? And if so, what positions might they add? What players might be out there? We're also going to hit some live chat questions. Excited to hang out with you guys. But first, before we do anything else, we got a super chat here from Gary Soto. So I will hit the thing.
Keeping a book.
Gary says, Graver, thanks for the advice. I'm officially single now. I left my wife just to make sure I never miss y'all's Music City Audible live streams. Tighten up. I don't know if this is a joke or, I mean, obviously it's a joke, but I don't know if me being called out is the joke or if he's misremembering which of us gave the advice to leave their wives to attend the Friday live stream.
I think it was you. I think Gary's right. I'm like 99% sure it was you and not me who said that. So I can't be held accountable for anything here.
What a reference. Jordan Pace has identified the mic that I'm using, the Jabra. He says, not the Jabra episode. Yes, this is a Jabra headset. It's not cheap. I mean, it's not like, it's pretty good sound quality. I definitely will say I got this from my old boss who bought this for Zoom calls during COVID, wore it one time, said, I hate this. Justin, do you want it? And I said, sure. So this has been sitting in a closet of mine for like 5-6 years. I've never really broken it out. And I decided that I'm going to the lake this weekend. Might as well bring the Jabra headset.
Can't bring the soundboard with them. But Gary Soto confirming it was definitely Graver. This is 2-1. Me and Gary on the same page here as per usual. Just making sure.
Totally. Apparently, I'm like Peel in the meme. I don't know which meme, but there's a lot of Key and Peel memes out there. So, all right, Justin. First thing we're going to talk about here is players that the Titans should add or not. There was an article written in ESPN earlier this week that was like every team's last offseason move, and there's like one suggested offseason move. This is the one I was picturing, Hershey, sweating bullets. I mean, that's the one, really. But anyway, every team's offseason move, and it was written that the Titans should go sign Kenny Moore, the former slot cornerback of the Colts. It was written, Coach Robert Saleh and coordinator Gus Bradley say that they are confident in second-year cornerback Marcus Harris handling the nickelback role, but why not bring in some veteran competition to push him during training camp? Moore was still above average in my coverage DVOA metric last season, and he has always been strong against the run. Now, my opinion of this is when Kenny Moore was first released, we didn't really know how the Titans' new staff felt about Marcus Harris. This was before they had talked about him. This was written, by the way, by Aaron Schatz, the creator of DVOA, Football Outsiders, Football Almanac, all that stuff. And so we kind of talked about it a little bit when he was first released. Like, would this be intriguing, an option possibly for the Titans? And then Robert Saleh goes up there and, you know, unprompted calls out how amazing Marcus Harris is. And we've heard nothing but good things about Marcus Harris from the coaching staff, from the reporters who've been at OTAs and minicamp. And to me, this is old news. This move would be old news. Like, I get why you would suggest bringing in some veteran competition to push him during training camp. And if they decided to do that, that would make sense. Veteran competition. What I don't want a situation to develop would be they bring in somebody that, in the words of Dan Hansis, would be a progress stopper for the young guy. Like, the only way that Marcus Harris is going to prove that he belongs in this league is if he gets on the field to play. And the only way he's going to continue getting better is if he gets on the field to play. And even if that, like, even if you're just splitting reps in training camp, those are valuable reps for Marcus Harris. This isn't a team that needs a nickel back to go win the Super Bowl this year. We've said this about a lot of positions, but like, this is an exploratory season to find out if some of these young guys can become cornerstone pieces. To me, I disagree with the idea that the Titans should sign Kenny Moore.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle because I'm just as excited about Marcus Harris as you are, and I want him to be the starting nickel this year. The interesting things about Kenny Moore, obviously, I think I've mentioned this before, but we can't eliminate or ignore the relationship with Gus Bradley, right? Like, he had played for new Titans defensive coordinator Gus Bradley for a number of years with the Indianapolis Colts. So, you know, surely some overlap between Bradley and Saleh. I mean, that's why Saleh brought him here, right? So some overlap in the defensive system. So you know that Moore would probably hit the ground running with the playbook. I think they probably need more corner depth. Though I am inclined to believe they need more of it on the outside, you know, than they do the inside. But then again, we've asked the question, who plays nickel if Marcus Harris gets hurt? We literally do not know. So I don't know what Kenny Moore's expectations are. He has been a pretty good nickel corner. I would assume his expectation is that wherever he signs, he's going to play a lot. But if I'm wrong about that, if he is willing to come in and play, yeah, I mean, where it's in June and he's unsigned, right? Like, not great. If he's willing to come in and play a sub-package role or, you know, be the backup to Marcus Harris, when he was cut, I mean, I don't want to put much stock into this, but Adam Schefter called him a safety. Now, I assume that that's incorrect, right? But as you see, a bit, as Bill Dance brings up here, but if he is, like, playing some safety, or, you know, he wouldn't be the first aging corner to kind of make that transition to try to extend his pro career. I think they need more depth at safety. I think they need more depth at corner. Again, to me, like, my willingness to bring him in would probably come down to what his expectations are. Like, are you willing to be a backup? Are you willing to play, again, like a sub-package role? If so, I mean, he makes them better, right? He's probably better than Michael Robinson. He's probably better than, you know, Kedren Callaghan, some of these guys that we're actually going to talk about later this episode, probably in a couple minutes. But that's where I'm at with Kenny Moore. Like, I'm certainly not banging the table for it. I don't want anything that stops Marcus Harris's progress either. But I'm open to the possibility because, you know, Kenny Moore's a good football player. And hey, you know, call me I like good football players. It is what it is.
I think that's a good point. I hadn't really considered it. I don't know why, but like, if it depends on his approach and mindset, like you said, if he's okay with coming in as a backup because he loved playing for Gus Bradley and he wants to play for Robert Saleh and he believes in this Titans coaching staff's ability to turn the team around and like maybe be a surprise contender this year or next, maybe is more realistic. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say no to the idea of him as the backup or as depth, because like you said, the Titans don't have a backup nickel right now. Like, they'd be shifting players around in the secondary just to fill that spot if something did happen to Marcus Harris. And that's a scary thing to think about entering this season. Again, it is an evaluation season for this team. It's a rebuilding year still. So if you do lose a key player, like, yeah, that sucks, but it's not like it kills your championship window the way the Lions season was derailed by injuries when they really were a Super Bowl contender a couple of seasons ago. So I get it from that standpoint. At the same time, like, you don't want to enter the season with poor depth. As Ray Skull points out, that I sound like an air traffic control officer. I apologize, but you know what? It's, you guys are here for the words themselves, not the quality of the words, right? I hope.
I don't think you sound bad at all. I don't. I mean, a couple of other people said it sounds fine, so I don't.
Yeah. And you know, on the subject of older defensive backs moving to safety, I think Logan Ryan did that once upon a time when he went
Yeah.
back to the, was it when he went back to the Patriots or when he went to the Buccaneers? Maybe I'm
I think
thinking
the
of when he went to the
Bucks. Yeah, maybe
Buccaneers. Yeah.
both. Yeah.
Maybe both. Benjamin Miller says, isn't Jalen Ramsey technically a safety now? Not saying Kenny is in that category, but it plays with your point on the shift after years of experience. I mean, the safety position is a little bit less demanding in terms of your athleticism needs, depending on what kind of safety role you're playing and how the defensive coordinators are deploying you. But I think that could be it too. But the Titans don't really need safety depth. They need corner depth. I mean, not that they don't need safety depth, but I feel decently good about the top three safeties on this team after they add Tony Adams in the offseason. And Robert Saleh speaking at length about
I
the
mean,
leadership abilities and the culture impact of bringing a guy in like Tony Adams. So, yeah, I
they
mean,
seem to be pretty pumped about Tony Adams. Not to
right.
interject, but I think it was also the position coach that raved about him, and they said he's been a huge asset in the room, just getting these guys up to speed. Obviously, a lot of young players in the secondary. Sophomore starter Kevin Winston Jr. being one of the big ones who we expect to take a huge step forward. But not just him, right? Like, I'm sure Tony Adams has been helpful and useful for Marcus Harris. And they've got a UDFA rookie safety in Bishop Fitzgerald. They got three UDFA corners that I'm sure Tony Adams has had a couple conversations with and probably helped, start to pick up this playbook, during the offseason. So I'm with you. I don't think safety depth is a big issue, although I don't know who the number four is. I'm rooting for Bishop Fitzgerald. Because he had a pretty good year, pretty good career at USC, and I thought he was one of the more high-profile UDFAs that they brought in, to this year's undrafted rookie class. But don't know for sure who that fourth safety is. So if Kenny Moore is a combination of a number three, number four safety, a backup nickel, you can still make the argument, especially when you take into account the relationship with Gus Bradley.
Yeah, I think that's key. Justin, we're going to take our first break here. First, I'm going to hit a super chat from Nash Rust here, who I guess I got to do some sound effects to go
Keeping a
along
book
with
right now. We
this. Thanks, guys, for being the best Titans podcast. Appreciate that. That and totally non-irritating. If you know, you know. I'm going to pretend like I don't know, even though we all know. I'll pretend like I don't know to be politically correct. And nice to everyone else in the landscape. Appreciate you, Nash Rust. Hope you're still around because a minute later, Nash Rust said, gotta go. So appreciate you supporting the channel. Sorry if we didn't get to that soon enough to shout you out. Maybe you'll watch this back later if you did have to go. But again, thank you so much
Very
for the super chat.
generous.
Very
Very,
generous.
very generous. Thank you so much, Nash Rust, for that. Very, very generous of you. And again, yeah, I hope you watch the replay so you catch your shout out.
And just to close this conversation, Bruce is asking, will signing more take snaps away from Marcus Harris? Like, that's the thing. I think that's the question, is you sign him if you think it won't take snaps away from Marcus Harris. You don't sign him if it would take snaps away from Marcus Harris. Okay, first break for the audio audience. When we come back, we got other position groups, some much more notable, I think, that we're going to talk about, some that have been talked about since March. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Back, audio audience. You guys are missing out if you're just listening to this podcast, but that's your problem, not mine. Justin, offensive line. Let's be real. This is where the conversation gets serious here. This Titans offensive line, are they going to bring in more reinforcements? We've already seen them bring in a reinforcement earlier this week. Andre James, the center, who played for Carmen Brasillo with the Las Vegas Raiders, was a cap casualty, signed on for a very low contract to be a backup in LA Chargers last year. And the Titans now have two former Chargers backups from last season in Austin Deculus and Andre James.
I didn't put that together. I'm sorry, but that's so funny considering how terrible they were last year on when all those backup linemen had to play.
Committing treason as I wrapped in my season wrap recap. So my question here is Andre James. I think I was reading a Twitter conversation. So your writer, Will Lomas, posted an article about Andre James on Titan Sized. Roster Grids, who's here in the live chat today, replied to that tweet talking about, and I think this is a really good point that he made, that Andre James just raises the floor for this team, essentially.
He's better than Trey Hill, who they
better than exactly. He's like, is he competing with Schlotman for the starting job? Probably not. No. Like, if Schlotman gets hurt in training camp and is like healthy by week one but misses all of training camp, yeah, knock on wood, maybe he wins the starting job that way, but he just raises the floor. He's great depth because you can count on him not to be a total disaster if he does have to play snaps. Now, you can't say the same for multiple other backup spots on the offensive line. Right guard, we know, is the biggest question mark on the entire roster. And just to diverge myself here, Hurricane Lou, do I remember James as an option when we signed Kush or no? Yes, you do. That was the year he re-signed with the Raiders on a big contract that eventually got him cut. So, and the Titans ended up signing Cushenberry. So, yes, the right guard position, biggest question mark on the entire roster right now. Whoever wins that job, obviously we know the other guy would be the backup, which I guess makes you feel okay because it's like, well, he almost was the starter. But then the biggest concern to me, I've talked about it multiple times this offseason already, is the swing tackle spot. Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon out there with the first team offense during minicamp because J.C. Latham was nursing some minor injuries and giving up sacks. A lot of sacks. Kenmore took 5 sacks on Wednesday scrimmage practice just by himself, and he only played 4 series. So that's not an ideal situation. I wonder if they look to bring in any reinforcements with the big elephant name in the room being Kevin Zeitler still on the market at right guard.
I'm going to start with the offensive tackle thing because call me crazy, but in all honesty, if I could make one realistic upgrade to this roster right now, I think it would be at swing tackle. I am so unbelievably concerned about the situation behind Dan Moore and Brandon Crenshaw. Behind Dan Moore and J.C. Latham, I should say. As you noted, Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon stepped in for Latham at practice the other day as the starting right tackle with the first team offense. And it was noted, I believe, by Teron Davenport's observations at that second and final practice that he gave up a would-be sack to Jacob Martin. And on the very next rep, he jumped early and got flagged for a false start. Obviously, he had the previous rep fresh in his mind. The pads aren't on yet, so I know there's not a whole lot to take away from this spot. But I don't think we're going to feel any better about it when the pads come on. I haven't heard a peep about Austin Deculus, who I still can't believe they signed in free agency for some reason after the horrid season he had with the Chargers last year. Like, J.C. Latham and Dan Moore both missed time last year with injury. It's a very physical position. It's incredibly rare that your offensive tackles are going to make it through a season completely unscathed. And to think that if Dan Moore or Latham, who, by the way, is nursing an injury right now, as you noted, missed time last year, the hip injury, if either one of those guys has to miss any games, like, are they really going to rely on Austin Deculus or Brandon Crenshaw Dixon to get them through that game? That's probably going to be Dennis Daly or Andre Dillard level. They've got to try to get a little bit better at that spot. They don't have to be they don't have to be a whole lot better. They got to be what they were last year, where Ali Udoh kind of came in and was serviceable, right? He was like, okay, playing that spot. Austin Deculus is not okay. And I don't know if Brandon Crenshaw Dixon is okay because he hasn't really played in the NFL yet, but I don't feel comfortable wagering that he's going to be okay. Yeah, Austin, what the heculus? I mean, this is a spot that I'm really, really concerned about. I'll transition because you brought up Kevin Zeiler and we had a question.
Well, let's finish the tackle conversation before we finish because, yes, Bruce Bayko 6097. Who's available for swing tackle in free agency? Well, funny, you should ask because I just pulled up this page here. There's a bunch of tackles on the market. That's the thing. The question is, what level do they feel they need to go, especially if you're just talking about a swing tackle? Taylor Decker is on the market. Now, he has the highest projected market value of anybody, which is not included in this screenshot because Spotrek's website is a weird layout. $21 million market value. Like, let's be real. Taylor Decker is not going to sign for $21 million this offseason at this point in the offseason.
He's a really good player, though, and I'm confused why he has to get cut by the Lions. That was a little...
He is turning 33 this year, which, like, that's not old for an offensive lineman. That's one of the positions that can play deep into their 30s, but it's not young either, and he has dealt with some injury issues. But other guys on the list, Cam Robinson, who, you know, was a Jacksonville Jaguar for a long time, most recently with the Cleveland Browns. Jonah Williams, who's, you know, bounced in and out of starting lineups. And then you start really getting into, like, backup territory guys.
I'd bring in Jonah Williams or Cornelius Lucas. Like, those two names probably stand out to me the most. Jonah Williams has had a lot of injury issues throughout his career, so you'd want to check what the health status is. But if he's more comfortable at right tackle, so if he's playing backup right tackle and hopefully doesn't have to actually play, right, like, that's something that I'd consider.
That's true. Cornelius Lucas, Andres Pete, Kelvin Beachum, Kendall Lamb. Hello, former Titan. Calvin Anderson, Hakeem Adeniji, Joseph Noteboom. Like, look, I'd take any of these guys. And Josh Neiman was a guy that Panthers fans were super excited about as, like, a future starting tackle at one point, and then he just never got in the lineup, and now he's 30 years old. But, like, there are guys on this list.
Titans legend Kendall Lamb is on the list.
Yeah. There are guys on this list that would make the Titans' depth better. And the fact that they haven't made a move yet, I don't necessarily think that means they won't, but the fact is they haven't. And so we are talking about it. Jordan Pace with a comment. Party Jay and Lisa are going to be pissed when they find out their lake house has been repossessed to Gary Soto. My mother's name is Elise, not Lisa, but that's okay. I appreciate you knowing enough about her name to even get it close that I knew who you were talking about. Justin, interior offensive line, the Kevin Zeitler question, or anyone else. I mean, I'll be honest and say I view this a little similarly to Kenny Moore in the sense that if Jackson Slater can be a starting quality guard in the NFL, let him, right?
I am, yes, but where I guess it slightly differs is we've seen Marcus Harris play, so I've got a bit more confidence in Marcus Harris. I guess we saw Jackson Slater play one game, essentially, and he played fairly well in that game. That's fair to say, but I don't want to say that the ship has sailed on Kevin Zeitler because he's literally still available in free agency, and the going indication that he is going to sign somewhere eventually, right? Like, he hasn't retired, and the indication's been he wants to play this year, so he's going to sign somewhere once training camp rolls around. But it kind of feels like the ship has sailed with the Titans and Zeitler, doesn't it? I mean, maybe it hasn't, but it feels that way. Like, they talked up Jackson Slater competing for that job. It seems like they want to give him every opportunity to win it. They brought in Cordell Volson, who, again, is a 50-game starter in the NFL at guard. It feels like they've done a lot of things to kind of get ready, you know, to be prepared to move on from Zeitler, as they already have. So I would still be open to bringing him in. Of course, the best case scenario is they don't bring him in. Jackson Slater wins the job and he's good at it, because that gives you a multi-year solution at right guard. Remember, even after this year, he'll have two more years on a day three rookie contract, right? Like, that's would be outstanding for Mike Borgonzi and the Titans for roster building purposes. So I get why they want to give Jackson Slater this opportunity. I hope it works out. I hope he wins the job, and I hope he establishes himself as a really, you know, high-level starter. But, you know, certainly until we see proof of concept, it's going to be a question that makes this fan base a little uneasy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if he does make work out as a starter, it also gives you a high-level backup. Because while Cordell Olsen may be disappointing as a starting-level player, like, that's replacement level. That's literally what you hope to get in your backup depth player. So I think that's like the best case scenario for the Titans. And I actually don't really anticipate them signing Kevin Zeitler or any other guard. They did just sign Andre James, which took me by surprise, honestly. I still think swing tackle is super in play. And like, I would go as far as to say, I expect it sometime between now and when they end up in San Francisco 2 weeks into training camp, sometime between now and then, I think that
maybe it's a trade in the middle of camp. Like, I know the Dennis Daly move didn't work out, but like, they traded for Daly because they were trying to fix the swing tackle spot a number of years ago. I can see something like that where Borgonzi identifies a tackle on a roster that might not make a team that's better than, I mean, almost anyone, right? Like, that's better than Deculus. And they just swing like a 6-for-7 round swap and they get better there. Or I don't know if we want to address this comment really from Hershey forever, because there are a couple of UDFA tackles on the roster too. And Emil Wagner.
Well, there is Emil Wagner from Notre Dame and Rasheed Walker.
Miller, I think. Yeah. Rasheed Miller. Rasheed Walker is the good seventh round pick from a few. Yeah.
Rasheed Miller. Now here's an interesting thing. I don't know if this was a slip-up, an accident, or what. I'm pretty sure Teron Davenport tweeted the other day during minicamp that guard Rasheed Miller was something.
I am positive that I brought up this possibility several weeks ago. I don't know if you remember it, but I want to say, I might be misremembering now, but he's like really underweight, and I think initially played guard before moving to tackle this past year. But he was like 290 pounds or something like that. So he's probably not an NFL tackle. So I totally believe that Rasheed Miller is playing guard and not tackle. I want, you know what? I'm going to pull it up if you don't mind. I'm just grabbing my phone real quick. I remember reading something that like struck me throughout the pre-draft process that I'm like, oh, I don't know that. Like, he's like, they list him at 301. On the official Titans website. Like,
I think
two seasons at Louisville, started 13. Like, look at this. In 2025, started all 13 games at Louisville, with the first three coming at left guard. So, like, he was a guard before he moved to tackle, and he's underweight. It's probably not a tackle.
Right. So, there you go. So, maybe Emil Wagner can work out. But, I mean, Emil Wagner is just this year's Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon, who we're sitting here talking about how they need to replace. So, like, these guys go undrafted for a reason. Every once in a while, somebody works out, and you can cross your fingers and hope that Carmen Rosillo can coach him up. But you can't just bank on that working out.
Especially at tackle, right?
Right.
Like, tackles get drafted. So, it's so incredibly rare you're going to find an NFL-caliber tackle in UDFA. Hopefully, they get lucky.
We got Edward Soto here. Another Soto. Are you related to Gary? Let us know. Just curious. At least I'm one of 88 giving you a like. Look, if you're in the stream right now and you haven't hit the like button, what are you doing? You can do it on your phone. You can do it on your computer. You can maybe do it on your television. I'm actually not sure how that works during a live stream. But hit the like button. If you're not subscribed to the channel, I don't know how you found the show or why you're watching, but subscribe to the channel. Stick around. We're going to talk Titans every single weekday from now until the end of time. I don't know, our next break next summer. Like, let's be real here. We're going to be your source of Titans content all year long. So hit that subscribe button, like this video, get in the live chat. Sorry if you can hear my dog barking, you know, roadshow. My daughter
who
got me this shirt.
We're going to take our final break. Come back, close out with some interaction with the audience. You guys got, we don't really have a prepared topic for the third segment. We did that on purpose. We want to make sure we left enough time to answer your questions and interact with the Audible Army. So start getting those questions in if you have them.
Yeah, please do. All right, we will be right back. Yeah. Welcome back, audio audience. Going to roll through some comments here. I think talking about the future of the tackle position at this time of year is just as interesting to me as talking about the present, because there's nothing else going on, so why not spend some time talking about it?
You know, this time last year, it spurred a thought. We predicted that they would take an edge in the first round, I want to say. Yes. Now, they ended up going Cardale Tate at 4, but we weren't wrong, because they trade back up to 31 and take an edge in Keldrick Falk. And this time, this year, we've all been predicting offensive tackle in the first round next year, and I feel pretty good about that prediction, as Hershey Faeva notes here.
I think it's definitely on the table. I think it depends on how both tackles perform this year, because they're both under contract for at least two more seasons. If they pick up J.C. Latham's fifth-year option, he's got two more years. Dan Moore's got two more years. I don't know if they want to keep paying Dan Moore what they're paying him for the level of play that they're getting. But again, he's not like he's old. He's going into, his sixth season? Like, there's a chance that under Carmen Brasillo's tutelage, he could become an above average, or average at least, starting left tackle in this league. It's not like he's making $35 million a year, $30 million a year. He's only making 20-something, 20-ish, right around $20 million a year. I think that it's definitely possible, obviously, that they do take their left tackle of the future in the first round of next year. I also think it's equally likely that they target a position nobody's talking about right now, like cornerback. If they are picking where they want to be picking, outside the top 15, like Cam Ward said the other day, then that's the range that, like, you can get a very good starting cornerback one. I think Christian Gonzalez was, like, what, the 18th, 19th pick in the draft, something like that?
I'm going tackle or edge right now. I think the overwhelming possibility
is edge is the other.
Johnson on a one-year deal. We'll see what happens there. Does Femi firmly reach bust territory this year? Like, if so, I think edge is a strong possibility. But I do think tackle is a very, very, and then, sorry, someone notes here, tackle position, garden rug. I think it's garden rug 4073. I thought it was a name at first, but I think it's garden rug 4073. Shaping up pretty good. There's a couple tackles that are currently routinely mocked in the top 10 of next year's draft. Certainly, yeah, you've got Texas. What's the Texas kid's name again?
Trevor Gooseby,
excuse me. You got the kid is it LSU, Brad Seaton, who transferred there from Colorado, I believe, this offseason. So the tackle spot is shaping up pretty good right now. Obviously TBD, right? The whole college football season will tell us how it actually shapes up, but so far, so good.
Here's an interesting question from Danny Patterson. Does anyone know where the Titans are in the waiver claim pecking order when training camp cuts from the league start happening? Isn't this based on draft order?
I started this question. It's usually based on draft order. So they picked number four. Number four. Interesting here by Ray School. You really? Yeah. I mean, I slightly disagree here. I wasn't in love with Carter Smith's tape at Indiana last year at all. And I was actually glad he went back, because I had seen some top 50 buzz for him in last year's draft when people expected him to declare. I thought it made more sense that he went back. I didn't think his tape was pro ready. Of course, another year in that program might get him there. But as of now, I'm more intrigued by Gooseby and Seaton currently.
Yeah. Ray Skull says he's less worried about interior O-line than I am about how they will fix offensive tackle if the plan is to move on from Dan Moore next season. So here's my other thought on this, is that there are teams that draft an offensive tackle in the first round to come in and be their starting left tackle as a rookie. And that usually doesn't go great. Like, even the best rookie tackles don't usually play very well as rookies. So the best option here is that you draft that guy next year, but you keep Dan Moore to be your starter for another half season or so, and then you insert first-round pick. Like, I mean, that's the way the best teams build. They draft a year ahead of the need. If the Titans roster wasn't so terrible, they would have drafted that left tackle this year to prepare for next offseason. Once the Titans have restocked the roster with as much talent as they need to be competitive, then they can start actually going and drafting a year ahead of need. And then we'll have very boring drafts every year, because we'll be drafting a bunch of guys that aren't going to see the field for a whole season. But once you do that for multiple years in a row, then you have the guys you drafted the prior year who didn't play at all. Now they're going to come take a role on the team. Anyway, that's a long way off, but that's how you do it. You want to hit this one?
I started this one because Diabetta 303 corrected me. I think I called him Brad Seaton. It's Jordan Seaton. How big of a Titans fan are you? Was Brad Seaton not like a scrub tackle that was with the Titans for a couple weeks? That's why I said Brad Seaton. The name strikes me. Or he was a draft prospect. I remember interviewing him now, actually.
No, you are 100% right. He was on the Titans. He was a 2017 seventh round pick of the Titans.
Yes.
He was on the practice squad. No, sorry. He was on the offseason. He was in training camp for that 2017 season as a seventh round pick. Signed to the practice squad on September 20th. Released on November 9th. He was a Titan for about 4 months.
That's how much of a Titans guy we are. That's why I said Brad Seaton when I was trying to talk about Jordan Seaton. That's hilarious that I made that slip up, if you will. But we've got a super chat to hit that we haven't hit yet. So go ahead and do what you know you gotta do. Hit the thing. By the way, my timing's getting better as I don't mouth it and I just do the thing.
I think it's great when I hit it while you're still talking so that anyone listening on audio or whatever knows that it's not actually you saying it live, that it's part of a drop.
I freaking love it. Bruce Byko, 6097, with the very generous $5 super chat Canadian tip. He's up my neck of the woods somewhere in the country. Great show, Justin's, but now I am more stressed about the O-line. Look, we're sorry that we gave it to you. We gave you the real situation, the analysis of what it is. This team needs a swing tackle in a major way, and they've still got some questions on the interior as well. Thank you so much, Bruce. Hopefully the Titans will ease those concerns at some point by making an off-season move before training camp.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's okay to be concerned. I've said this multiple times. It's okay to be concerned about the offensive line, but it's not okay to panic yet because there's a chance that it works out. I mean, Carmen Brasillo has a track record of it working out okay. It's also on the quarterback to mitigate pressure as much as they possibly can. I think Cam Ward still struggles with that at times. At other times, he does an amazing job of buying time. Obviously, it's like his superpower is extending plays and making something happen. Sometimes he tries to do that, and the ball pops out of his hand, and he fumbles, and it's a turnover, and the other team picks it up and turns it for a touchdown, like what happened against the Saints. Hopefully, there's less of that and more of the evading pressure to make awesome plays down the field. But if I'm being totally honest about my expectations for the season, I expect Cam Ward to have to mitigate some pressure pretty frequently, like the way the offensive line is currently constructed.
Shout out to Bruce Byko. Sorry, he said he's in Thunder Bay, Ontario. So, Bruce, shout out Thunder Bay. And shout out our Canada, who scored a touchdown on Qatar yesterday in the World Cup. They had Joey Sly at kicker, so they missed the extra point. But we put up a 6-spot, beat Qatar 6-0. Although the Ismaël Koné injury was devastating. So important to our success. Seeing him break his leg in the middle of that game was devastating. Such a sad scene there, but shout out to Canada. They qualified for the next round already, essentially, with that win. Rain Man asked, Melo, where do I get that shirt? I don't know why you'd want this Will Levis and DeAndre Hopkins NFL Jam shirt. I do love the way the shirt looks in general. I wish maybe it was a different quarterback. Yeah, I just realized it says, there we go. I didn't see that. But unfortunately, I shouldn't say unfortunately. This shirt was sent to me, I think I've said a couple times, like Titans sent me a care package last year. It had a bunch of really nice, awesome, very generous, some really nice, awesome things. This is one of the shirts that was in that gift package. So I wear it around the house. I don't go out in it, but I wear it around the house when I'm working at home.
Just to close the book on the guard tackle conversation here, we got a couple more questions on that. And then some other topics that we're going to hit quickly before we say goodbye today. This is how TD, as I said, I was right. It was Teron Davenport. Thank you to Thor Soros for going and double checking this. Guard Rashid Miller and tackle Ryan Hayes are struggling, giving up sacks and a couple of false starts. That's how TD noted it. So he's not really allowed to say who's lining up where, but he's allowed to call somebody by their position to clarify who they are. And he sort of gave us, I think this is like a wink and a nod, like, hey, by the way, Rashid Miller is a guard. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. Do you want to run through some rapid fire with some of these starred questions that?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. We're on the same page here, and we're trying to do it over time. 92 Dom, how much improved is the wide receiver corps? Is this a group that swings games in 2026? It's drastically improved, right? Bringing in Carnell Tate, bringing in Wandell Robinson, hopefully getting sophomore jumps from Alec Ioman or Shimmeray DK. I think this is one of the better receiving corps in Titans history. And I do think it is drastically improved. And maybe, yes, maybe it will swing a couple games in 2026.
And the name of the game is it creating explosives on offense. The Titans didn't do enough of that last year. That's why they went and added Wandale Robinson and Carnell Tate. Not that Wandale Robinson necessarily creates explosives, but Carnell Tate creates explosives. Wandale Robinson has the ability to, and also just to keep you on track, up that third down conversion rate, up that second down success rate, where you're not gaining 1 yard on second down, but you gain 5 yards on second down so that you can actually set up a convertible third down and not be forced into a third and long situation over and over and over again. So I think you can't understate how improved the group is. In fact, if Calvin Ridley is healthy and contributing, it could be one of the top trios in all of football. Now, they're never going to have – I mean, not never, but they don't have like a Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. They don't have a CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens. They probably don't even have a Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison level. I mean, those – like most of those guys were first-round picks or second-round picks. But they do have – three guys, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a team with three players who have the ceiling potential that this trio has. Obviously, everything would have to go right for that to hit. I don't know that it will. But, vastly – the most improved position group on the Titans roster, in my opinion, is either receiver or cornerback.
By far, no doubt about it. Start a fun one from Hershey Forever here. What Titans pick were you most wrong about? And either direction, thought he'd be good on tanked or thought it was a bad pick and turned out great. I'll be honest with you, because we're Titans fans, I can't think of many picks that I like hated and turned out great. I didn't love the Rashawn Evans pick, but that didn't turn out very good. If I had to say wrong about, I didn't love the Isaiah Wilson pick, and that was obviously disastrous. Two picks that I liked that didn't turn out good, I'll raise my hand and admit, were they in the same class? Caleb Farley, we all knew the risk, but I was infatuated with Caleb Farley's tape at Virginia Tech. I thought he was so damn good in college. And I also liked Dylan Raidens. I thought Dylan Raidens was going to be a good NFL offensive lineman. There's always a question with those small school guys coming out of North Dakota State, but those were two picks I liked that I thought would, you know, work out better than they did.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You and I were huge on Caleb Farley, predicted it on this podcast right before the draft, and then he was the pick. We were so excited. I still don't think that was necessarily a bad gamble to take. You took a similar gamble on Jeffrey Simmons, and look how that one worked out, right? So I think that the pick made sense at the time, just couldn't get over the injury bug. Mine is Corey Davis. I was in love with Corey Davis as a prospect. I was saying the Titans need to draft him for months leading up to the draft. They actually did it, even though we got a report 2 days before the draft that they were going to take O.J. Howard with the 5th overall pick, to which we all said a tight end at 5. Obviously, Corey Davis didn't live up to being the 5th overall pick. He still has the record for most career receiving yards at the NCAA Division I
That's
level.
That's crazy.
He was a good prospect. It just he just didn't have that extra special sauce that made him a true star in the league. Yeah. He would have been a fine wide receiver too, still today, if he was still playing. He retired early because a lot of guys are doing that now for health reasons or whatever. He made his money. He doesn't need to keep playing and beating up his body. I respect his decision. He's my biggest miss though, because I thought he was going to be a super duper star.
I think it goes back to how excited I got about Dylan Raidens. You got to tread carefully with these small school guys, right? There's just a huge acclimation from Western Michigan and North Dakota State to the NFL, right? So, and it didn't really work out for either of them. I'm going to put this one up quickly because we've kind of addressed it already, but Rainman Jones 01. If Morin Latham can't hold it down, does the whole ship sink on offense? I'm convinced so. I'm going to go with what Graver said, I think we're counting on Cam Ward to be able to navigate some of that pressure. I think he can do it. We saw him do it at a decent clip rate last year, where the ability to escape and create. But it's not something I want him to have to do too often. So hopefully Dan Moore and JC Latham are available, healthy, and at least, league average, I think, would get this offense by. Ray School, I really hope they figure out a way to get Dylan Stewart or Colin Simmons to, as of now, elite pass rushing prospects. I think both of them are probably top 10 picks in 2027 if all goes according to plan this year. And certainly, again, edge rusher, it depends what happens with Jermaine Johnson, depends what happens with Femi Oladejo. Titans could be firmly in the mix for an edge next offseason. And in come April, maybe Dylan Stewart and Colin Simmons will be options for them in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it always happens, right? Caleb Downs was like was mocked like third and fourth and fifth overall this time last year. Falls to what, pick 12, to where he went to the Cowboys. I mean, that happens all the time. We're gonna fly through these last ones really quick, just to go back to the top trio wide receiver conversation. Amon-Ra St. Brown did say this when, if you haven't watched it, like, I can't say that I recommend it. Carnell Tate sat down for about 20 minutes with Amon-Ra St. Brown and his brother on the St. Brown podcast. Look, it was pretty boring overall. I mean, it's fun to see Carnell Tate's like personality just because it's fun to get to know these guys when they play for your team. But like, nothing really big came out of it. The biggest takeaway I had from this podcast was that Carnell Tate grew up a Bears fan. Carnell Tate is still a Bears fan. Carnell Tate called Caleb Williams the Iceman, which is his dumb nickname that Bears fans use. And it sounded like Carnell Tate wants to go play with Caleb Williams, honestly. It kind of made me mad watching this podcast. But yeah, at least Carnell Tate knows ball. Like, at least he knows who Jared Goff is, unlike Jeremiah Love, who, like, once I saw that, I was like, Titans dodged a bullet there. But yeah, go check out the podcast if you're curious about it. Justin, who's your pick to make the 53 as RB4, assuming there are no injuries? Oh. Do they keep four? Do you think they keep four?
I think they keep three, to be honest with you. I wouldn't rule out four, but I know what you're going to say, and yeah, you should say it.
The Titans are going to keep more defensive linemen than we are used to. And if they do that, it's a zero-sum game here, right? There's 53 guys they can keep. If they add to the D-line group, they got to take away from other groups. And RB is a room that I think you can safely take away from, stash guys on the practice squad, or just sign somebody off the street in the middle of the season if you have to, because it's running back. It doesn't matter.
And spoiler alert, Graver and I are planning to do our first 53-man roster projection next week. It won't be a live show. It'll be one of our edited shows. Not going to promise you guys a day, but next week, we're going to have our first 53-man roster projection coming out of minicamp, leading into training camp. Really excited about that episode. Fun to see how it'll evolve over camp. Good way too early look at what we think the 53 could end up looking like.
Yeah. If I had to answer this question right now, though, I would say, like, is Nick Singleton RB3? And then who's RB4? Like, is Julius Chestnut or Khalil Mullings or Michael Carter, like, are those guys worth keeping on your roster over an extra special teams player or defensive lineman or offensive lineman,
well,
or whatever?
Is like, Khalil Mullings a good special? Maybe he is. Like, he's used to play linebacker. Like, maybe their RB4 is just a special teams guy, and maybe it is Khalil Mullings because he played linebacker before he played running back.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, exactly. Roster goods. I think they need a running back who plays special teams. Chestnut is also a guy who plays special teams, and he can like return kicks in a pinch if something happens to Chimere Dike, or if Chimere Dike is only a punt returner, not the kick returner this year, or whatever. Well, we'll do a few more and then we'll say goodbye. Lil Charles 28. Can Gunnar Helm be the Frank Wycheck for Cam Ward with his Steve McNair comparison? Can he be, like, talent wise? I think he could get to that point. I question how much of a target hog he's gonna be, because Daniel Bellinger is also gonna get his fair share of targets. I think this is one of the eye-opening things that minicamp stood out to me from minicamp, is Daniel Bellinger out caught Gunnar Helm in both days of minicamp, because they're gonna play a lot of two tight end sets, and a lot of times the guy who's out running the route is going down the field up the seam or taking the top off a defense or pulling linebackers out, and that kind of role can be a lower target, higher yards per catch role. Daniel Bellinger as the blocker, like, sometimes the blocking tight end leaks into a route and gets lost and forgotten about. And so they end up with three or four catches, whereas the guy you're targeting up the seam only gets one or two because it gets covered or it's a more dangerous throw or whatever. I feel like Gunnar Helm, I'm going to be very interested to track who leads a tight end room in receptions and receiving yards, and if it's the same player leading in both categories. Because I think there's a shot that they are about neck and neck in terms of production from that tight end spot, which is really going to hurt if you take one of these guys in your fantasy football leagues. But I
wouldn't recommend it. I'm not drafting Bellinger or Helm in fantasy football.
Same.
I mean, this is not, they're not going to be stats guys, right? They're going to be team first, you know, selfless type of guys. But I don't know if you got any more they seem, but if we want to call it here, I mean, we're almost at an hour. Graver's been doing this from the lake house. I mean, a very, you know, shout out to him for his dedication. Really appreciate it. We want to tap in with you guys every Friday, like we promised to do so. So here we are.
But don't get too lofty with those promises, Justin. We haven't told you guys this yet. We are going to have three Fridays upcoming. We'll be back live next Friday. And then the following three Fridays, which I believe are all July, technically July Fridays, first three Fridays of July, we won't be having a live stream. We'll have a show up. It'll be a taped show, taped in advance, to be completely transparent with y'all. I'm going to take a break from the live streams for the next we'll do one next week, and then the next 3 weeks after that, take a little break. And then we'll be back before training camp starts with more live shows. And, of course, we'll be live. We might be live every day during training camp. We'll have to see how the practice schedule lays out. But we did that. I don't know. The diehard, the Audible Army members, the diehard followers of this channel will remember that this time last year, we were not a five-day-a-week podcast. We were a 1 or 2 day a week as we saw fit. And then training camp started, and we wanted to just cover every training camp practice. And we have essentially morphed into an everyday show, like right in front of your eyes, just because we wanted to cover every training camp practice, and then got into the season and said, hey, we are an everyday show now. And then we've been that since. So, but anyway,
yeah, we're coming up on our first year anniversary of being an everyday show.
Roster Grids has a question. Where's the Discord? Stay tuned. Announcement coming on that in the next month-ish or so. We'll get to that soon, don't worry, but maybe closer to training camp starting. All right, that'll do it, Justin. Any final thoughts?
That's going to do it for today's episode of the Music City Audible podcast. Thanks to the Audible Army for tuning in. Good luck to USA later, playing Australia in today's first World Cup match. I believe USA will auto qualify if they can win it, and if they tie it, they're in really, really good shape. So either way, they're setting up nicely. Hey Mello, are you considering switching to Canada as your main World Cup team? Sorry, I get this question here. No, I mean I love Canada. I'm so glad that they are through, and I was celebrated like crazy yesterday. But I would pump the brakes on Portugal's tournament being over because they tied their first match. Something tells me that Portugal has got a long way to go in this tournament still, and will probably make some people look stupid for celebrating our tie. I think we're coming for some revenge soon. We'll see. But until Monday, when we are back covering probably the Tennessee Titans, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.